Welcome to The Source on KSTX 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. In February, Union Pacific ended its agreement with the Lone Star Rail District that would have allowed a San Antonio to Austin commuter rail service on its tracks. UP said it's going to need that track line in the future for freight trains. And was that the end of the line for a San Antonio Austin commuter rail service? What are the alternatives? Helping us figure out this situation, we're joined by Kevin Wolf. He's a county commissioner here in Bexar County and on the San Alamo area MPO. He's a board member there. Also, a little bit later on, we're going to be joined by Joe Cryer, San Antonio City Council member for District 9. And we invite you into the conversation. Give us a call. The number is 210-614-8980. You could also email your questions and comments to thesource@tpr.org. So, Kevin Wolf, Commissioner Wolf, welcome back to The Source, and tell us what happened. I mean, I don't understand this. You know, it seems like $28 million has been spent on studies and plans and all sorts of meetings and all sorts of stuff that was supposed to happen with this Lone Star Rail thing. And then we find out this agreement is so slipshod that at this key time that Union Pacific can say, oh, we're not going to play anymore. And it's like, what have we been doing?
Well, you know, it's been a dream of ours for really over 20 years to have some sort of rail between Austin and San Antonio. And I think still to today, everybody thinks that's a great idea. However, what we've been doing in the past to implement that idea obviously hasn't worked. And so, you know, I kind of see this as an opportunity for us to step back and say, let's stop doing what we've been doing and let's figure out how to really push this thing forward. You know, one of the ideas proposed is to, you know, abolish what I'll call the operational arm of Lone Star, keep the board in place, and utilize TxDOT for any sort of operational activity that needs to take place. That way you're not spending $28 million over 20-some-odd years and ending up with no product. You wait until you've actually got a plan that you can implement, and then you start going for the dollars. That's been a mistake that we've made here and held on to the dream or hope that some sort of deal would be negotiable with UP and their right-of-way on the western side of 35. Obviously, that's not going to take place.
Right now, Bexar County's relationship with Lone Star Rail is what?
We are a member, a dues-paying member, as is the city of San Antonio and a number of other communities between here and Austin, which helps to fund their operating cost. Here recently, we had started to commit half a million dollars that would go to the operating cost of the actual rail line. That's when we kind of said, wait a minute, there is no actual rail line. Why are we committing these dollars? That's when the corresponding conversations took place with UP and when we found out that UP is going to not only no, but hell no, we're not going to make this deal.
So Bexar County pulled back.
We pulled back
on the funding for this rail service because it had no track.
Correct.
Okay, but Bexar County is still a member of the, and you're attending meetings.
Yes.
and trying to figure out what the way forward is.
Yeah, we are a member of the rail district. Right. So think of it as, you know, we're part of their planning organization, as is the city of San Antonio and other communities.
Right, between San Antonio and Austin, so San Marcos, New Braunfels, places like that. So we're now joined by Joe Cryer, city council member for District 9. And Councilman Cryer, welcome back to The Source. And tell us your feelings about how things are going with Lone Star Rail.
Well, number one, thank you all for the time you focused on this issue. My feelings are the same as the commissioner's. We have got to have an alternative to paving more and more land around I-35, number one. Number two, we all know that within the next 10 years, it will take longer to walk to Austin than it took to drive there when the interstate was built. We are losing time every day. So we've got to do it. But as the commissioner points out, we've been on this journey now for a decade, and it would appear that we haven't gotten very far.
We haven't gotten there very far. I mean, we've gotten nowhere.
Well, where we have gotten is to the point of doing environmental studies on a route with a partner who has told us they're not going to be our partner. I was at a meeting last Friday that Mayor Taylor commissioned of the mayors of Austin, San Marcos, New Braunfels, and San Antonio. And the point the mayor of Austin made there was, listen, our MPO made a commitment to pay for the environmental and engineering studies, which we have been doing for the last decade. Your MPO set its money aside for construction. As the commissioner knows, there hadn't been any construction. So even though our MPO, led by Councilman Lopez, has set aside $20 million for Lone Star Rail, none of that money has been spent or evidently will be spent until we have construction.
So Austin has been carrying a bigger burden.
They spent about $12 million of their $20 million on the environmental impact study.
And that study is still ongoing.
It is still ongoing. And we're kind of caught in a catch-22. We have to complete that study because part of it is utilizing federal dollars. And if we don't complete the study, then we have to pay back the federal dollars. So essentially what will probably happen is they'll complete the EIS. It'll turn out to show that this is a non-viable option. And then from the federal government standpoint, okay, you did your job by, you know, studying it. However, then we end up with a study of a route that we know is not possible.
Right, but I don't know if it helps to find fault, but I still don't understand. How is it that we got to this point when we didn't really have a stronger agreement with Union Pacific? I mean, shouldn't this have been firmed up a long time ago?
Well, you're raising a very good question, and we were assured repeatedly by Lone Star Rail that they had an understanding with Union Pacific. As it turns out, that understanding was more on the part of Lone Star Rail than it was on the part of Union Pacific. And it's one of the reasons I share the view, and I think the commissioner does too, that it is time for a change in leadership at Lone Star Rail. We've had the same people working on this for a decade without success. My view is if you do the same thing over and over again and get the same results, something's wrong. So we need new leadership, I think, across the board at Lone Star Rail.
It's like, if you were going to do this in business, say, I'm going to build this item on this plot of land here, and you get people to put in money, and you start spending money and building plans and drawing up all sorts of stuff, and then you don't even have the right to that land, and the whole plan goes kaput, that's fraud.
Well, there's a guy running for president right now who would say, you're fired. And it seems to me it is time to say to some of the folks at Lone Star Rail, you're fired, and we need to get a new team in place. I trust the commissioner would concur with that.
Yes.
All right. Well, we've got to figure out how that would happen. And there is the understanding that we need some sort of rail system, some way to move people between San Antonio and Austin to both cities' benefit for, I don't know if we call it the SAAA area, the San Antonio-Austin area or something. We got to come up with some vision for the 7 million people who are going to be doing a lot of economic activity. We got to move people around. We got to make money. We've got to make everybody happy. So how are we going to do that? Give us a call. The number is 210-614-8980. This is The Source on KSTX. You're listening to The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. There's little doubt that a commuter rail line linking San Antonio and Austin would be a pretty good plan. But the plan that we had was dealt a serious blow when Union Pacific said it would not give up the needed track. Now the future of Lone Star Rail District is in doubt. Area leaders say if a commuter rail is going to happen, maybe a different agency with a different plan should run the show. We're joined by Kevin Wolf, County Commissioner and Alamo Area MPO Board Member, and Joe Cryer, a San Antonio City Council Board Member, a City Council Member at District 9. And we invite your phone calls. What should happen to, how do we move this forward? How badly do you think we ought to force this issue that we do have some sort of rail line between San Antonio and Austin? The number is 210-614-8980. And so, Councilman Cryer, I'm not having this line of track. I mean, is this line of track completely gone? Was this a negotiating tactic maybe from Union Pacific? Is there a way to bring it back in? And if we don't have it, what are the options?
Well, we've been to the movie with Union Pacific before. Councilman Wolf's father could tell you about Union Pacific refusing to provide rail access when Toyota came here. And it wasn't until the county posted a notice on their agenda that they were going to build their own railroad line that Union Pacific said, oops, I think we will make our track available to you after all. So I've learned never to say never, but they've been pretty firm that they're backing out. Whether or not it's a negotiating ploy remains to be seen. We've got a session of the legislature coming up, and railroads invariably have issues about things like right-of-way, and we may have an opportunity to say something to Union Pacific that causes them to reassess.
And you want anything you want to add to that, Commissioner?
Well, you know, I was in the room when the county judge asked the CEO of UP, are you guys ever going to do this deal? And the CEO was emphatic. He was not only no, but hell no. He goes, it doesn't make any sense for us as a business entity to even think about sharing, much less giving any of our right-of-way on a freight line that is only continuing to increase in traffic. So, you know, if you're looking at it purely from a business standpoint in your UP, I can understand their decision. And he was, as I said, emphatic that this is never going to happen.
Okay, let's go to the callers. The number is 210-614-8980 if you want to join the conversation. David is on the line. David, hi, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thank you. The question I have is that if we're talking about this being a commuter line out there, and from what I've seen on the information, that it's going to be 7 to 8 stops from San Antonio to Austin. So how is that a commuter line? I mean, obviously the traffic's going to be to a point on the regular expressway. You can't get anywhere. And by the way, UP's never going to give anything up. So where do we go?
You know, he brings up a great point. In fact, that was the other thing that came to light in all of this, is that as things started to get tight for LSTAR, they started to pick up more partners up and down the corridor. And in exchange for that, they said, we'll put stops in. It's not 7 stops. It was 19 stops. So by the time you stop 19 times between here and Austin, you might as well be in your car rather than on the train. So again, you know, a flawed piece of the plan, at least from my perspective.
Well, the catch in that, though, Kevin, you might as well be on I-35 taking 2.5 to 3 hours to get there. The nice thing about trains is they run on a schedule and they don't get 18-wheelers crossways across the track in front of them unless, of course, they run crossing,
that's
which is always a possibility. But part of what we're trading off here is predictability. I take SH-130 to Austin. It is a little longer, and it takes a little time, but it takes exactly the same amount of time every time I go.
That's a good.
But it's also,
you
know, if you're driving a car, you're driving a car. If you're on a train, you can read a book or do paperwork or be online, all sorts of ways. That's not downtime anymore. That's work time.
True.
Okay, let's get another caller, Mark. Hi, Mark. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thank you. I wanted to ask the judge, why can we not eminent domain that track? I mean, we're pretty good at doing it for, you know, all kinds of stuff. Why can't we do that to a rail line?
All right, Mark, thank you for the call. It's a good call. And so not judge, but Commissioner Wolf, well, maybe someday, but we'll see. eminent domain.
There's a slight possibility of that, but remember, you're talking about a number of different political entities between here and Austin, whether they're the city, whether they're the county, et cetera. Plus, railroads, from a federal standpoint, have a lot of power themselves. And so, again, Joe pointed out the time when with Toyota, we looked down that track to say, could we eminent domain it? It was, you know, like I said, there's a possibility, but it's real slim, and you'd be fighting it forever.
Right. There are a lot of laws that support the railroad simply giving them lots of power because, you know, many, many years ago, we wanted them to build a rail line here, and we gave them a lot of authority.
Senator K. Bailey Hutchison once said to me that in 18 years in the United States, Senate, the most arrogant national corporation she dealt with was Union Pacific. So it ain't easy. And one of the reasons it ain't easy is because the laws in this state and most states were drawn to favor the railroads.
Another caller, Brian. Hi, Brian. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi, thank you. So there's an election coming up for the railroad commissioner, and I'm wondering if either of those people have voiced any concern or if they have any bearing on any of this. I'll take my comment off the air.
All right, Brian, good question. You know, the Railroad Commission doesn't really operate the railroads. It's about oil.
It's such a misnomer, but it goes to show you how powerful railroads war, especially in early times that they were ended up calling that. Our railroad commission is really about energy production and not about transportation. So from an election standpoint, you probably won't see any of those candidates take a stand or a position in regards to this issue.
Right. The Railroad Commission was the first regulatory institution in the state of Texas, put in by Governor Hogg. It was a way to try and help farmers so that we could end the exploitative practices at the time. And now they morphed into energy production and became one of the most powerful entities in the nation and helped to prop up the energy when Texas was a major energy producer. Another caller, Bennett, is on the line. Hi, Bennett. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Well, Cryer and the Wolves have been batting their gums about railroads for the last 20 years, and they seem to give you the impression that, oh, it's this wonderful thing that we could have. They won't tell you the cost of building a railroad are very expensive, and for every passenger who gets on a railroad line in the United States, there's 80% of the cost that comes from taxpayers who don't ride the railroad. And that's a fact. And VIA is a case in point. For every passenger that gets on a VIA bus, the taxpayers ante up $5 or $6 to subsidize that bus ride. And VIA runs empty. Most of their buses run dead empty, and these guys don't want to talk about it. The traffic projections for railroads between Austin and San Antonio is worse than the VIA. And who the hell is going to subsidize it? Cryer?
Okay, Bennett. Good. Thank you for your call. Appreciate it. VIA buses do not run empty all of the time. You know, I see them, I ride them, and there have quite a few fellow passengers. But the issue of subsidy, whether or not an entity like a railroad, a commuter rail, would be able to be completely self-sufficient, is that an issue?
It's always going to be an issue, and I don't care where you look in this country. On average, any mass transportation, be it bus, be it train, etc., is subsidized somewhere between 70 and 75%. Nobody has been able to make it work on a even break-even standpoint. That's not why you look at mass transportation, though. You look at the effects that mass transportation have on other economic development factors, whether that's getting people to and from work or just flat transportation. That's why you consider mass transportation.
Well, and how does Bennett or anybody else think we've paid for highways for the last 75 years with a gas tax? That's paid by taxpayers, and it continues to be taxpayer paid. We call them freeways. They were not free, and they aren't free. And rail provides a vehicle by way of quick example. We have over 150,000 students between Southwestern in Georgetown and Texas A&M South. We'd only need a small percentage of that number to get on a commuter train every day from here north or from north south to make a rail line work. I don't have any doubt that if you build it, they will come. The issue is, how do you build it? And the point the caller made, which is a good one, is whether it's Union Pacific or some other route, you're going to have to spend about $1 billion to build track. And right now, there's not an obvious source for that $1 billion. And if you pick another route, you're going to have to start your environmental impact study all over again.
Right. So, I mean, I'm waiting for Loop 410 to make money. It doesn't make money because, you know, all the cars, people that use it, that was paid for by taxpayers, and it's not going to make a dollar, but it's going to get you where you want to go. But so what's going to happen now? If that track, this is the track that runs parallel to I-35, and everyone thought this was the solution, of course, and Union Pacific needs it, they're going to run their freight on it. Are we going to have to build? Are there other freight lines that are available that are no longer being used, or something they would want to give up, or we could purchase, or lease, or how's that work?
Well, there are other routes available, but they all require paying for track. The only reason Union Pacific was ever interested in giving Lone Star access to its track was on the condition that Lone Star Rail find $1 billion to build a new freight route for Union Pacific. That's the $1 billion-plus question, which the commissioner and I have been concerned about for a long time.
Right. So the argument I had heard from the Lone Star Rail folks is that, you know, Union Pacific wants to get out from inside the city because it's congested and all sorts of regulations and problems are being involved. If they can move to some sort of a rail that goes around the city and that that would be paid for, then they would be happy to use that. That turned out not to be the case. So what happens now with Lone Star Rail? They don't have a rail, and yet these people have jobs and they're making, you know, they're being paid, and what's their future? They don't even have a website anymore. You know, that's been taken down. So what are they doing over there, Kevin?
Well, if I get my way, and I think the councilman agrees, we will essentially abolish the operational arm until such time as there is a solid, legitimate plan and a way to pay for the building, the capital cost of actually building a rail line. There's no sense in us continuing to spend good money after bad, especially when we know that it's not going to work in the place that everybody said it was going to work. So again, from my perspective, we turn off the faucets today. We allow either the LSTAR board to continue a planning process, which really doesn't cost anything, or we even turn that over to the two MPOs here, San Antonio's MPO and Austin's MPO, because they're planning organizations already in regards to all modes of transportation.
And so Councilman Cryer, turn off the faucet of money to the Lone Star Rail? That's what the city council?
Well, I certainly think the commissioner's got some good ideas there. Mayor Adler last Friday suggested that what we ought to do is get the two MPOs to sit down with each other rather than complain at each other about who's spending whose money for what, and figure out a joint policy between our MPO and Austin's MPO to move this project forward. We've got to have this. We can't get people to work, school, and church 20 years from now if we don't.
All right. So we will stay tuned. What happens with this continuing drama? I've been talking about this forever. Hopefully one day we'll be able to ride the train between Austin and San Antonio. And thank you so much, Joe Cryer, Kevin Wolf. This is The Source on KSTX. When we come back, progress report on the East Side Promise Zone. Stay tuned.